Judge Committee, the Legacy Funding and Finance Committee to order, and we're going to have the staff go through a walkthrough on the spreadsheet first.
Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can start on Article 1.
Article 1.
All right. On the spreadsheet, on the first page, it's the large spreadsheet dated 5/16/2017. I'll just talk about the changes that we made from what we heard earlier. On line 7, the WMA SNA acquisition phase 9, the House had a reduction of $2,124,000. We did not include that reduction, but with this particular project, we shifted $1,373,000 into fiscal year 19 in order to make a 5% budget reserve for the fund. On line 8, the accelerated wildlife management area acquisition phase 9, the House had a reduction of $2,124,000. We did not include that in the conference committee report. The next change you'll see is on line 32, the forest pest response. It was a $500,000 appropriation that both the House and Senate had, but it did not make it into the conference committee report, or the DE that we have in front of us, I should say. On line 46, the shallow lakes and wetland protection phase 6, the House had a similar reduction of $2,125,000 that was not included in the DE. Line 47, right below that, the reinvested Minnesota wetlands reserve phase 8, the House had appropriated an additional $5 million based on those previous cuts that is not included here. And, Mr. Chair, I believe that is all the changes that were made to the Outdoor Heritage Fund article, and we're at a total appropriation of $102,605,000 the first year and $1,958,000 the second year, and we have a 5% reserve in at the end of fiscal year 18. I believe Mr. Mueller is going to do Article 2.
Mr. Chairman and members, I will go through Article 2. I'll start with Article 2, the Clean Water Fund. The first agency is Department of Agriculture. The first change is line 107. We're doing the $5 million recommendation from on the Senate side. On line 109, the Forever Green Perennial Crop Research, the $1.5 million from the Senate. And then on the last one, line 111, $150,000 of vegetative cover that was in the House bill. Next is the Public Facilities Authority. We did a slight reduction from both bills. We're at $16 million even, slightly less than what the Senate had. Down to pollution control on line 122, the total max, the TMDL and RAPs set the House level. $19.047 million. Line 125, the TMDL database. It's less than both the House and the Senate had coming in by $1 million. Then on line 127, the SSTS subsurface treatment systems. We're at the closer to the House level on that one. Stormwater research 128. At 450, that's a little bit less than both coming in. Then the Voyageurs National Park on line 129 was a Senate position, and then St. Croix River Association, again on line 130, was a Senate position. On to DNR. Watershed restoration strategies at the House level, 372. Aquifer monitoring, $2.75 million at the Senate level. And then on line 141, the non-point source, $1.9 million is at the House level. Next we have Board of Water and Soil Resources, which is the major agency in this area, at $95.5 million. A lot of these either took the House or the Senate number. The first one, line 151, for the one watershed grants is nine at Senate level. Next one, the surface and drinking water grants, is at the House level, $24.5 million. Then accelerated technical assistance was at the House level. Line 155, riparian protection, that was at the Senate level. Then buffer easements on line 156. That's at the Senate level. And the targeted wellhead that was in the Senate bill on line 157 is in this proposal at $3.5 million. Line 160, watershed management, that's at the House level. And then the conservation crop program on line 162, the $3 million that was in the Senate bill is on this proposal. Department of Health, we largely were much closer to what the House had funded the programs at the Department of Health at a higher level than the Senate, and we went much closer to the House levels of funding for the various programs at the Department of Health. And then Met Council, the single program that's funded here is the Metropolitan Water Supply. Their overall program at $1.9 million, and then the two other programs that were in the House bill are not funded. University of Minnesota, the Senate had not funded any of these proposals at the University of Minnesota, and the House did, and they're now in the conference committee report, the House proposals. The repairing protection aid that was in the House bill at $2 million per year is not in this proposal. So the total clean water is at $211,870,000. Which is a little bit above the $257,000 above the Senate coming in, and $498,000 less than the House, and it does meet the 5% fund balance. I'll briefly go over Article 3, starting on page 6 of the spreadsheet. The proposals were largely pretty much the same between the House and the Senate. The only difference is the Senate had a $1,000 extra, more in appropriations, and we're going at that level. So the total, again, there is $89.764 million, and that, again, has a 5% fund balance. And I believe the House is going to take Article 4. Chair?
Yeah?
May I ask just a quick question on line item 124?
124?
It's the Duluth River system cleanup, I believe. Are those dollars eligible for a federal match?
I'm not sure.
If you don't know, that's fine. We can get it off. Just care, we have money in the bonding bill for that system or that project as well, and I believe it's the same project, and it is eligible for a match there. So I'm just kind of wondering if that's the same money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, it actually requires a match in the language. If you look at the language,
it says
this must be matched by a rate of 65% non-state money to 35% state money.
Good enough. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Greta's saying it is. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
You haven't answered for that question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gothier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. It is eligible, Mr. Chairman and Senator Senjum. That line is eligible for federal match. It is not the same program specifically as where the bonding dollars would go. But it is part of the same overall effort to clean up the St. Louis River estuary in the Duluth Harbor.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And who was? John Law.
Mr. Chair and members, starting with Article 4 on page 7, the conference is in the far right. Beginning on line 273, the conference committee report achieves 47% for the Arts Board, the way originally proposed by the Senate. That includes $46.289 million for arts and arts access initiatives, $8.725 for arts education collaborations, and just under $3 million for arts and cultural heritage. In addition to the 47%, there are two small grants. ArtsMap software was granted $50,000, and $75,000 went to the Dan Patch statues. Down on line 283, where the Historical Society begins, There's $11 million for historic and cultural grants, $11 million for statewide history programs, and $4 million for history partnerships. The statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites received $800,000, and the Minnesota Digital Library $600,000. In addition to those dollars for the agency, there were grants included of $160,000 for the historic Andrew Farm, $160,000 for the Woodbury Miller Barn, the Fort Snelling Chapel Stained Glass, $100,000, $250,000 for the Fairmont Opera House, and $50,000 for the Litchfield Opera House. That brings us down to line 298, the Department of Education. There's $2.5 million a year for a total of $5 million for regional public library grants. Mr. Chair, on line 304, we begin with the Department of Administration. There is $3.2 million for Minnesota Public Radio and $3.2 million for AMPRS. Minnesota Public Television received $8,050,000, of which $650,000 is dedicated to the Vietnam Remembers Project. Wilderness Inquiry received $500,000. There is $2.7 for the Como Park Zoo. The Science Museum received $1.2 million. There's $300,000 for the Green Giant Museum in the city of Blue Earth, and $150,000 for the Lake Superior Zoo. Moving on to page 8, there's $50,000 for the Minnesota State Band. There are memorial grants for the Rice County Veterans Memorial of $30,000, the Waseca Vets Memorial of $50,000. The Minnesota Square Park Pavilion in St. Peter received $200,000. We have $107,000 for the state archaeologist for reburial of non-Indian remains, $250,000 for a Medal of Honor memorial, and $222,000 for Camp Legionville. We also have the Veterans Rest Camp at Big Marine Lake for $278,000 and $50,000 for Midwest Outdoors Unlimited. Mr. Chair, moving down to line 329, the Minnesota Zoo. The Minnesota Zoo received $3.5 million for the biennium. On line 333 for the Humanities Center, there's $2.25 million for program development, and of those dollars, there is a set aside of $250,000 for Why Treaties Matter, $200,000 for Veterans Voices, and $55,000 for the Governor's Council on Disabilities Digital Archives. For community identity and heritage grants, there's $75,000 set aside for City of St. Paul Tocra Courts. On line 340, the Minnesota Children's Museum receives $1 million. The Duluth Children's Museum gets $300,000 for the biennium. Grand Rapids Children's Museum, $300,000 for the biennium. Southern Minnesota, Minnesota Children's Museum, $300,000 for the biennium. And the Wheel and Cog Children's Museum gets $80,000. There are $400,000 appropriated for civic education competitive grants and $47,000 for the Rondo Commemorative Plaza. On line 349, there's Somali Community and Museum grants, including the FONCA program, as appropriated $400,000. Mr. Chair, moving to the top of page 9, the Indian Affairs Council. There's $1.69 million for language preservation and education grants, the Nagani Ojibwe Immersion School, $250,000, the Wikawi Nandagakenden Urban Immersion Project, $500,000, and $200,000 for graves protection. The Agricultural Department, on line 367, received $300,000 for the biennium for county fair grants, and we set aside on line 372 $9,000 for the Legislative Coordinating Commission website. Mr. Chair, that leaves a 5% balance in the reserve in both years, and that completes Article 4.
Okay. Mr. Taylor, would you like to walk through the DE...
Mr. Chair, members, I'll just point out in the DE before you the A170469, the sort of significant policy differences that whether we went House, Senate, or other. The first one would be on page 7 on the Carnelian Creek Conservation Corridor. This would be the House language that did not include a requirement to have a hunting and fishing plan. The next would be on page 16 of the DE amendment. And if you look on lines 16.8 through 16.10, this is the Senate language, which had included that additional language requiring land acquired in fee to be open to hunting and fishing. The next thing I'd like to point out would be on 18. If you look at line 18.28, this is the House language, which did not include mention of indirect costs. The next would be on page 21 at the top. You'll see a new subdivision 10. If you remember, the House had had money set aside for the CREP program. Instead of that, there's this new provision that would require the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council to consider recommending up to $15 million for fiscal year 2019. For the policy, section 3, this was identical on both sides. Section 4, the reserve requirement, this is the House language. There's only technical differences between the two. And then section 5, the DE includes the House's provision to require applicants to submit previous funding, and where that fund came from is to determine supplanting or substitution. The House language on section 6 was included. This was just inadvertently left out of the bill as drafted before. And then I think the next thing of importance would be page 40. There's a new section 10. If you remember, the House that had language that prohibited the use of Outdoor Heritage Fund and then other funds to be used for indirect costs. Instead of that, there's a new section, and this will, you'll see this section repeated on all four articles, but it would require MMB to put together a report on the indirect costs that are being charged to the various funds, and this is the one for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And then Article 2, there aren't a lot of significant things to point out. The first would be page 55, I believe. On lines 55.9 through 55.27, this is the Senate's language on the SWCD money. It was a little bit broader, if you remember, than the House section language, providing some more flexibility. The next would be on page 59, section 12, the House language regarding the funding, like previous funding provisions that we saw in the Outdoor Heritage Fund is also included here. Section 13 on page 61, this is the House version of the reserve requirement. And then you'll see the new section 14 on the Clean Water Fund indirect costs in the report that MMB would do. Article 3, again, there's not a lot of things to point out. Page 63, the regional park grants for those outside of the metropolitan area, we went with the Senate language in the DE. Also on page 65 for the Met Council grants, this would also has the Senate language, allowing the implementing agencies to determine what the list of projects would be. And then on 66, section 6, this is the House's reserve requirement language. Sections 7 through 9 were in both the bills, and they're included here. And then section 10 is the new indirect cost report requirement for the Parks and Trails Fund. And then Article 4.
Chair and members, I'm Mary Mullen from House Research. Article 4 only has three policy provisions, and those are all found on the very last page of the Delete Everything Amendment, page 84. So if you flip to the back, Section 3 was a House-only provision that just was clarifying that the 47% of the State Arts Board appropriation can be for the biennium instead of year by year. Section 4 is the House language on the reserve requirement, which was a similar provision that both the House and the Senate had. And Section 5 is new language that is related to indirect costs that requires a report from the Commissioner of Management and Budget.
Anybody want any questions about that? Going through the DE amendment by any members? Must have done a great job. So then we'll go through the amendments we have, and first we'll start with Representative Rood's oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have a small technical oral amendment on page 70, line 70.15. After $50,000, the first year is for a grant. Put in the two words, or contract. And the reason for this is the Arts Board, and they can make grants to nonprofit organizations, but a for-profit company may be the best vendor for this to create the software app. And so they want to be able to enter in a professional agreement with them and pick, choose the best person to do that job for the app. So just allows them to do that. So we appreciate your support.
Makes sense to me. Any questions about the oral amendment? You want to repeat that again, Mary?
Chair and members, the oral amendment would be on page 70, line 15, after the word grant, insert, or contract.
Okay, any other questions on that oral amendment? Seeing done, none. Representative Rood will move her oral amendment. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. The next amendment. We have the A43 amendment. Representative Green, would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was in our bill. It's been bandied around a lot. This is the No Net Gain amendment. Just to explain it, and there's a lot of information going around about it that's not completely accurate, but you have all got papers at your desk from various counties around the state. There's a letter in there from Township Association and also some ones from the county, Minnesota Association of Counties, and they are in support of this. We have one of the resolutions, just to give you an idea, from Lake County, explains in their no net gain resolution that 83% of their county is now non-taxable, and that's kind of the norm, becoming the norm in northern Minnesota. And so the amendment does not mandate anything. It simply gives counties the option to say, if we file no net gain in our county because our taxpayers can't take any more of this, then the state has to recognize that if they buy land in that county, that they would be forced to sell the equal amount of land within that same county, so there would be a no net loss to the county in their property tax base. It's more than just the property for us. It's a loss of land that now our young people can't have anymore. It's out of their hands. So it's driving up the cost of the of land. The values are going up. In my opinion, it's what the increase in the county tax forfeit is a big cause of that. Monoma County, for instance, this year sent out 19 tax forfeit letters today, Clearwater County 37, Becker County 67, and that's kind of what's been going on out there. And as we lose that land too, then that goes into the hands of the state, and we lose more of our tax base. It's just a real problem for us. And so, with that, I'll stand for questions. I'd like a roll call on this as well. And that's the amendment.
Okay. Any questions from the members? Senator, I want to call you representative.
You
aren't as good a fisherman as I am.
Yes, I know that. Nobody's as good a fisherman as you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Senator Green. Representative Green, you're all going back. The no net gain thing has been around a lot, and I know it's been near and dear to you, and I understand that, and you and I have discussed it several times. And but is it true the counties can do this without coming to the legislature at this time?
Mr. Chair, the counties can and have filed no net gain policies, but the state is not under any obligation to recognize them. For instance, Clearwater County has had a no net gain in place, a policy in place for quite a few years now, and yet last session they lost near 2,000 acres. And, you know, thankfully we did get some provisions in there that some taxes were paid on that. But nevertheless, the counties have expressed to me that they want their resolution to mean something, and right now it apparently doesn't.
Representative Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been around to those meetings with you and other, Representative Fabian and all of us. We get together every year and we meet with the township people, and they come out and they give us their concerns about this very issue. And I've always said that I know that this has certainly been a part of their discussion, and even to the point of we're not going to get any taxes, there's going to be nothing, they're not going to get anything. We know that's not true. They're going to get pay in lieu of taxes. But I get down to the point where I always say, well, are you going to be telling Farmer John that he can't sell his land to anybody in particular? Are you as a county board going to do that? And they kind of back away from that, and I think that's a real legitimate concern, because if I was a county board member and the son doesn't want to come home and farm, and maybe somebody wants to come in and buy the, you know, less than compromised land for hunting and fishing, would the county say, no, you can't sell it to Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Deer Hunters? I think constitutionally there would be an issue. Do you agree or disagree?
Representative Green.
I disagree. And I would use this example, Senator. If I served on a board of any company and I was in charge of that company's money, just because the company said we will not purchase any more land does not prevent the person who's selling that land from selling it to anyone else. We as legislators within this state have an obligation to the people of the state, and we're spending their money. This isn't the same as a private sale between two people. We are spending taxpayers' dollars, and on the position of PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, and to keep in mind that payment in lieu of taxes is only other tax dollars. We're taking tax dollars and we're recycling them into the counties to make the counties whole. So we're robbing from other funds to pay these. And we're not paying them in full. I think we're paying PILT on about 60%. And when the PILT money runs out, the payments run out. And the PILT money also doesn't get filtered down to all the entities that are affected by this, such as the schools, townships. And so there's a lot of issues there. And then that still doesn't rectify the situation of the land values going up. I'll use my own family as an example. My son wants to move back up north, and we ended up selling him our place, and I was happy to do that. But you start looking around for land up there, and what is left is ungodly high. And young people who want to start families and raise their children in greater Minnesota, especially northern Minnesota, are having a much harder time. And as you know up there, the wages are not what they are down here. And so people choose to live up there because they like the area. It is a great place to raise a family. I recommend anybody come up and do that. But we are losing our ability to do that. And this amendment is not mandating, and that's the important thing. This is the county choices. We are here to make decisions for the state, but our county officials are making decisions for the people in the closest in the counties, and they're saying we've had enough. And I have other resolutions coming, but was waiting for the county boards to meet. For instance, there's none in here from Manoman, but I know Manoman is putting one together. Clearwater County has had one for many years. And so this is it's a growing issue, and it's not going to go away, and I would just like to get it taken care of.
Mr. Chair, if I could just really quickly respond, and I don't want to belabor this, but I know that was an issue in talking with the townships and meeting with them every year, is the filtering down from the county to the townships as far as them not getting money, and I don't understand why that happens. I don't. I think that might be a county decision. But here again, That's a county decision. If they're not giving them part of that pay in lieu of taxes, then that still is not our problem. That should be done between the local units of government. So Manoman County, I don't know that much about it. I know you're from up that direction, but I know they've been in some issues up there going into trust lands. Most of that land has been going into the trust, as we all know, and I think they're having a hard time getting any tax money out of that. And I don't think that has anything to do with this. So I know you're passionate about it, and I am as well as many others. And I would ask members to not vote for this amendment.
Okay. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, members, I represent northern counties as well. And I think a couple of things I want to touch on. First of all four counties that I represent have no net gain policies in place. And, you know, they didn't do those no net gain policies simply because they just felt like, oh, let's just do one. It's a significant concern. When you talk about tilt, counties get, $2 an acre or something like that. It went up from $1.52 or $1.51. But if one of us owns that property, we're going to be paying about $8 or $10 an acre. In local property taxes, and they do go to the schools, and they do go to the counties, and they do go to the townships, and they go to the garbage collection and all that sort of stuff that goes on there as well. In Representative Green's amendment, and this has been in other areas, there's no mandate in here. I think that people have to understand that. If another entity finds a piece of property that they think is valuable to them, and it fits into their management plan, they can still go to the county and ask them for the authority to purchase that. I think what the counties are looking for here, well, there's a number of things, but I think what's been lost a lot in the discussion about this whole situation is a lack of recognition that a problem does really exist. And maybe more importantly to them is just a lack of respect for what local people think is an important issue for them. And when their concerns are diminished and criticized, in some cases very, very harshly, it makes those people feel like they're just put here so that northern Minnesota can be somebody else's playground. And we welcome people to come to northern Minnesota, okay? If you want a fish lake of the woods, let me know, or I'll take you out someday. But I do think that it's important that in this discussion that there is serious consideration given to the fact that this is a big issue for locally elected officials. They want to be respected. They do not want their concerns to be diminished. And I can tell you truthfully that they feel disrespected and they feel diminished and that their concerns, number one, are not important, and number two, they are not valid. And, folks, I can tell you that it is. And I know that this is going to get voted down here. I understand how this works. But I would encourage you folks who disagree with Representative Green and myself to pick up the phone and call Jack Swanson, the county commissioner in Roseau County. Or call Scott Peters, the county auditor in Marshall County, and talk to them and get their side of the story. You know, these things don't happen because Representative Green and Fabian sit around in their office and kind of, well, let's conjure up something that can really be controversial. We are doing what we have been asked to do, which is to represent the concerns of the people that live in our district, 39,582 plus or minus 1%. And I'm not saying it's universal up there, but sincerely, folks, please check it out. Ask those people what's important to them and why. And I think that you'll find that they're pretty reasonable people. They care a lot about the environment. They care a lot about habitat. And they want to work with other folks. But they don't feel like a lot of people want to work with them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Just in one last statement, I know comments have been made in the past, not here today, but in the past, that the Department of Natural Resources does ask for permission from the counties. But if you do look into the Lesard Sam's recommendations, and I went through them line by line, I know them pretty well, and out of 15 land acquisitions, 10 did not seek county board approval. So it does not happen all that much. In fact, I've come to believe that the only time it does happen is when they know they can get it. So this is a problem.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I can't let some of this go by. I know I sit on Lesard Sam's, and one of the requirements, one of the boxes you have to check off is that did you, in fact, work with the local units of government? That is taken very serious by that Lesard Sam's council. I can tell you that for a fact. And getting back to what Senator, excuse me, Representative Fabian is talking about, counties should be respected. I understand that. I get that. But there comes a different line when the counties are going to tell people who they can sell their land to and who they can't. That's where we really got to be careful. But if they have four willing counties up there in the Northwest Part, not willing counties, four counties and Olneg counties, then are you getting a lot of complaints from them? I'm just not. I have Ottertail and Douglas County, and I've never had the counties come and complain to me about that, or property owners complaining about that. Maybe you're seeing it more so in your area than I am.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, I do. All of these counties have no net gains, and they've all asked me to be involved in this debate here in the legislature to bring their concerns forward. And the Northern Counties Land Utilization Board, New Club, nine counties, sent a letter down here as well expressing their concerns about no net gain. So I'm extremely comfortable representing those concerns.
Representative Green, one more, huh?
One more, and then I will quit. But just to clarify, I if you look in the Lesard Sam's recommendations, and it will, you're right, there's a statement in there, was county board approval sought? And on 10 of those recommendations, it says no. And once again, it is not about who you can sell your land to. It's whether or not an entity should be buying it. If I want to buy 1,000 acres of land, which I would love to do, but I don't have the money to do it, then I can't do it. That doesn't mean that the person who's selling that land won't sell that land. They will. Land sells pretty fast up there if it's good land. And so those arguments are not valid here.
Senator Root.
Mr. Chair and members, one of the concerns that I have, there's many members on this board that have worked really hard over the years on the school trust issue, and we've come a long way in making headway in making sure we have a good inventory of those lands and that we're doing a good job for the school children. And my concern is the impact that this blanket no net gain would have for the school trust land. We've been working very hard with the Boundary Waters Canoe Area on a global agreement, and this could greatly impact our ability to do that. There's 83 acres of school trust land that we've been working on a hybrid exchange sale, and I'm afraid of what this blanket net no net gain could do to that. The DNR is also required to compensate the school trust at the end of 2018 on lands that have been used for boat launches and other things. And so this could also hamper their ability to exchange land, sell lands, and do what they need to do to ensure the fiduciary responsibility to the children. So I have very big concerns about how this impacts school trust land.
Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I hesitate to jump, as a St. Paul senator, to jump into the middle of this. So my comments are not directed toward the merits or demerits of the issue presented by Representative Fabian and Representative Green. And certainly been around here long enough to have some sense of the issue and the volatility of some of this in outstate Minnesota. So my comments are a little bit different. And so my background, my academic background is American history, so I like history. So it's a little bit of history. And this, Mr. Chairman, to be fair, is from a Senate perspective, although I should point out, I think I'm the only Senate conference who has actually served in the House, although it's been some time. During the promulgation of the Legacy Amendment, there was a commitment on the part of the Senate. So again, I'm not speaking for the House, but there was a commitment on the part of the Senate to maintain the integrity of the Lessard-Sams Commission recommendations. And this isn't to suggest, again, I use the word integrity, I'm not talking about the issue of no-net gains itself, but to respect the work done by the Commission, and absent something highly irregular, to place into the legacy bill the recommendations of the Commission without making significant changes to either the appropriations or the language as presented by the Commission. Now, obviously, the Commission has members on the legislature, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, I think you're one of the House members, I think. And so, obviously, Representative Fabian, you've participated in the conversations and debates within the Commission very directly. And on the Senate side, we've had, I think, what, five legacy bills, well, on the House side as well, obviously. And I've authored three of them, obviously, Senator Rood and Senator Ingebrigtsen. And we've made the attempt in the Senate with, I think, strong support to try to present as our position the maintenance of what had been promised. And I recognize, Mr. Chairman, that in the legislature, obviously, we're the legislature, so we can make some changes as we think appropriate. I would suggest that this is a highly unusual piece of legislation in that it was passed, and not just relative to the Habitat article, but this was passed based not only on legislative debate, but obviously a significant public campaign. And representations were made during the legislative discussions 10 years ago. And again, this was certainly a strong Senate position. But there were representations made during the legislative discussions and then subsequently during the campaign of 2008 that for your vote on this amendment, we will protect what is presented by Lessard-Sams. So that's why I suggest that my vote on this amendment is not a vote up or down on the merits or demerits of the no-net gain issue. On that issue, I'd probably just sit back and be educated and listen. But my position is predicated on what I think the commitment was in a very unusual and unique kind of debate that was presented and then supported by the vote of, I think, whatever it was, a couple million, 2.5 million people in 2008. And so I think that makes the debate on this bill truly unique in the years I've been in the legislature in terms of what the intent is. So I think it's intent not only of us, but intent of hundreds of thousands and millions of Minnesotans.
Appreciate your comments. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To clarify, similar to your comments, I would say that when the Lessard-Sams Council brings recommendations, that's what they are, the recommendations. But we were put here by citizens of Minnesota to make these decisions. So the recommendations come to us, and we decide if they're right for our area or not. And to say that because the Lessard-Sams Council has said that they want to continue buying land without ever considering how much is enough. When you've got 83% of a county and more that is no longer taxable, in my area, Beltrami County, highly populated, 75% or more, and now you're saying that because this language was passed, these people no longer have a say. The land is cheaper up there than it is down south, so that's what gets purchased. And so if we up there now are saying that you're starving us out in land, the legislature now is saying, too bad. We don't recognize it. You don't have a say anymore because this law was passed. I think that's wrong. And then I would also say to Senator Root's comments, this is not a blanket. It's not a blanket of anything. And school trust lands are already public lands. So they wouldn't be affected by this. And if the DNR wants to trade those school trust lands for something else, that is not affected by this. This is buying a private land. So there is a difference.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just respond to Representative Green very quickly. So Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I don't want you to misunderstand me because my comments are not directed toward the issue itself. I glanced at I think the letters you presented from several of the counties. I think I've been to all the counties. In fact, Representative Fabian mentioned Lake of the Woods. It's been a while, but I've canoed to Lake of the Woods, I think, three or four times over the years. So my comment is directed toward, again, the very unique nature of this particular bill. Now, if this was an issue to be resolved possibly in Representative Fabian and Senator Ingridson's committees, that might be a different story. But again, I place kind of I have a unique perspective on the promulgation of this. And to be honest, I think the impetus for the legacy amendment, I don't think it's unfair to say that the impetus for the legacy amendment in terms of the passage over those several years came from within primarily the Senate Finance Committee. And so, you know, with apologies, as the person who chaired the committee at that time, I take some pride in what the Senate Finance Committee did. So I don't want a misunderstanding that I'm arguing against the issue, but it seems to me that there might be a better place in the legislative process to have a fuller debate about that issue as opposed to within this bill, given, again, what I would argue is the unique status of what's in front of us.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I've been honored the last couple of years to be on this is my second time go around on Lessard Sam's, and you know I really enjoy it. They're really about hunting. I'm more about fishing, I guess, and even trails, which doesn't fit in there very well. Right. So, anyways, but it's this group is very earnest about what they do and look at projects. And at the same time, I'm reading through these letters, and you know it's. You know, I don't hold any of this against Representative Green because, you know, when the numbers are real, the 83%. I mean, when you think about it, 83% of a county, and whether state ownership, federal, county, you know, it's just that's a lot of land locked up in county, and so it's interesting. But when you look at the letters, they're, you know, it almost seems, and I think the DNR, we had testimony in our committee, and I felt, you know, I was listening to it, where they kind of said that they might find a parcel, and they're trying to put it back on the market. So when you look at some of the letters, some of these, like Lake County, that has 83%, it said, you know, maybe, you know, evaluate the parcels and then, you know, shoot it back to private ownership. So, you know, by doing some of that, or... Roseau County said no new lands may be, or St. Louis, thank you. Oh, Roseau was here. To be fair, at the end here, I think that's your county. Get some hockey sticks from up there, right? So, I guess ATVs. So, but they said to be fair, the DNR has scheduled sale of scattered parcels of state land in Roseau County later this year and planning more in the future, you know. So, I think sometimes there's a bit of a misconception because they might acquire land and maybe with a private owner, but that doesn't mean they're not working with the counties. I mean, they're involved in the discussions, and we've heard them. You know, sometimes it's them that's driving the purchase, but some, you know, when it comes before Lessard Sands, but sometimes it's maybe a group or a private citizen, and then maybe, but the county's involved. I mean, they're, at least every time I've seen it, but at the same time, I don't hold it against Representative Green. I get it. If 83%, I mean, it's a big number. So I don't hold any of this against you. I just I really think the group's trying in good faith, and they've certainly heard what you've said. And you know, maybe the future purchases will be in Western Minnesota. You know, to protect the prairies more or something. But you know, I think, I don't, you know, you may lose today, but I don't know that, you know, people are listening, you know, at the same time. So anyways, I would speak against the amendment, though, today.
Well, I kind of have the opposite problem where I live. I live on the Iowa line. We have 43 or 4,500 acres of government-owned land, and there's a group there that wants to have the Pheasants Forever group buy 211 acres, I believe, and I hope they get it done because we don't have a lot of habitat for public to hunt on. And our land is worth a whole lot more money than the land where Representative Green's from. We probably average $11,000 an acre for farmland. This is a piece of land that is not worth a whole lot compared to the other land. It's worth a lot of money compared to $5,500 an acre, I think, something in that area. But they want, people want to know that they have a place to hunt. So that's where the positiveness, and I hope we get that past you guys that are on the Sergeant Sam's. Smile at that one, please. But I think we don't have the same problem you have, but I recognize your problem. I've certainly listened to you for 2 years now, at least.
Not over.
I'm sure it's not, and I look forward to some more. But I think there might be a solution, and I agree with Senator Cohen that maybe now is not the time, and here is not the place to get that done. We'll have to look at other ways we can accomplish what you would like to accomplish, and I think we can have some negotiations with the DNR to do that. But any other questions about this amendment, the A43 amendment? Seeing none, they wanted the clerk to take the roll.
Chair Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Fabian?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Senator Reid?
No.
Senator Ingerpetson?
No.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Lang? Senator Cohen?
No.
Well, the vote was four ayes and six nays. Three nays in the Senate side. The amendment does not pass. And next we have Representative Lilly has an amendment, A45. Would you like to present an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A45 is an amendment that shows up on page 80 of your delete all, and it's adding in language to help the Lake Superior Center or the aquarium. And those folks are, it's a project on a river ecosystem, and then how it impacts people, so that's why we felt it would fit into the humanities area, and it's just it's for their consideration in the grants program. It's it may not make the cut, but it's just to ask them to at least consider it. So it would go in there after the words may consider museums, organizations, and then add in the word and the Lake Superior Center. So it doesn't change numbers. It just kind of adds them as a potential. This is for Representative Murphy and Senator Simonson.
Okay, he's ready. Any other questions about the amendment? Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, with apologies, because Representative Lilly and I have talked about this, and I got here a couple minutes late. There were some folks who grabbed me coming off the floor. Having done this, been chair of this committee, I recognize, like many appropriation bills, but I think this one in particular is, the square peg in the round hole. It's difficult to put together. I know the two chairs have been killing themselves in doing this. And there's been an attempt throughout this bill, and it's very evident, to try to address the concerns of members in a very legitimate way. I think it's unfortunate that what's presented, and I want to be fair, that the Senate bill we voted on did not have money for the Lake Superior Center. And I particularly apologize to Senator Rood, because I talked to Senator Rood about this for a minute, but didn't come up with an idea. So I do want to present this to the committee, and I'm not sure what Representative Lilly is going to think about this. But to at least provide some small amount. And so I was going to suggest $75,000 a year, taking $100,000 from the Como Park Zoo, which, of course, is in St. Paul. And I, over the years, have provided lots of money for the Como Park Zoo, lots. And I was trying to also look at large increases, and it's become institutionalized, large increases in this bill from at least the Senate position. And it's become institutionalized, but it was not contemplated as part of this originally, but now it has become institutionalized, like I said, to take a small amount from the library line of $50,000 to provide, say, $25,000 a year from that, and provide some money for this to allow it to be part of the bill. And nothing's easy to do in this case, and that's why, as a St. Paul legislator, I think there's an importance to try to work with people from all geographies. So I suggest that, Representative Lilly, I don't know, again, I didn't have a chance to talk to you about this, so I don't know if this would be something acceptable to the committee as opposed to your language.
Mr. Chair, I think I would prefer to go with my amendment at this point. Mr.
With
Chair.
Your amendment? Okay.
Sorry. No. I wasn't in that meeting in the Senate when you came up with this whole thing.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lewis, I'm seeing Mary Murphy nodding her head out there, and this is, you know, important to her, and she's in favor of this amendment to allow funding to happen, and so I think your amendment is very appropriate. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the members? Seeing none, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support your co-chair, Senator Rood. I was interpreting her to say that she would go with my original amendment, and so that's my intent as the author of the amendment. But thank you, Senator Cohen. I appreciate your thoughts, and I want to see when you go to Como and what they do to you. But
Well, Mr. Chairman, if the zookeeper lets one of the bears out, I'll give you a call.
Okay, seeing no other comment, Representative Lilly would renew his motion to have the A45 amendment be voted on at this time. So all in favor of the A45 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Negative. Amendment passes. Thank you. And now we have the Torkelson Amendment, the A47 Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know this has come in late, but it is an important issue that I hope folks will take a listen to and then make up their minds as to the appropriateness of this change in the allocations. As you all know, the CREP issue has been a big issue this session, and as we look at that issue and try to access the funds necessary to fund CREP, it's become very clear that it does not affect the entire state of Minnesota, of course. And while we have parts of the state that are not eligible for CREP, the buffer requirements that are currently in law do affect all parts of the state of Minnesota. And in an effort to try and not duplicate CREP, but to offer a little bit of additional benefit to those areas of the state that do not qualify for CREP application or funding. We've put together this amendment that that does reallocate some of the Bowser funds within the Clean Water Fund. And if you would be so kind as to indulge me, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring forward Mr. Ron Harnack to explain the amendment in detail.
Welcome to our committee. Name for the record and tell us all you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Harnack with the Red River Watershed Management Board. Also speaking on behalf of some of the counties up in northwestern Minnesota. Appreciate the opportunity to be before you this evening to talk about Representative Torkelson's amendment. As all you know, buffers have been a major issue before us for the last 3 years. One of the primary components associated with buffers has been landowner compensation, as well as local government assumption of the program to administer it. It is recognized that CREP, which is an important program for the state, important program for buffers, was to be one of the primary means for compensation to landowners. However, when the CREP program was finally adopted, it did not include 9 major agricultural counties in northwestern Minnesota. It basically, the counties above Highway 10 are not included. Those are the counties of Clearwater, Roseau, Kitson, Red Lake, Pennington, Norman, Monoman, Polk, and Marshall counties. They're major agricultural counties. They are counties also that have, for the most part, met their CRP caps in many cases, which, again, limits the opportunities for landowners to have any kind of compensation to help them with the buffer issue. We feel the cost share side of it is a reasonable consideration to be able to look at this and provide some degree of compensation for those landowners. It won't provide the same amount as CREP will, but it does make a significant step in the right direction, and we appreciate your consideration of this amendment.
Okay. I think it would be nice to have Bowser come down and give us their opinion, wouldn't it?
That would be desirable, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So, Mr. Chair and members, our first preference would be that this would be an additionality as opposed to replacing some of the implementation cost share.
Representative Torkelson, is that your desire to have an additionality instead of replacement?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think anybody's got $5 million in their pocket that they're going to hand over to me today, so I don't think that's Greg Davis isn't here. We just don't have that option available, this seems to be the most appropriate spot to land this particular allocation.
And Mr. Chair and members, and understanding that this is language that it's important to be able to offer this, and it's important to be able to offer cost sharing, that the agency will work with this language and make it happen.
So you'd like to figure out what you want to do about this?
Mr. Chair, so the language that's in here, while it's not our desire to have it replace other implementation, that this is something that the agency can work with and will implement this language if directed to do so.
Senator.
So this will be taken out of programs that other that will be utilized by other soil and water districts, correct? Is that how this you see this to work?
Mr. Chair, members, so what this does and the way that I understand this to be read is this will come out of the part of the Clean Water Fund legacy that was for projects and practices, conservation projects and practices, of which that could go to soil and water districts or watershed districts. This is also implementation money that would go to soil and water districts for buffers. And Representative Torkelson, would you correct me if I'm wrong with that?
No, that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly right. So these are all on-the-ground practices. This happens to be an effort to target some of these funds to on-the-ground buffer implementation.
And Ms. Kudelka, so how many applications do you get from around the state for these programs from different soil and water districts? This takes a lot of funding out from the rest of the state. So do you have enough money to fill those applications if we take all this money out?
Mr. Chair, members, are you referring to the requests that we get for Clean Water Fund applications?
Like for the soil and water districts.
Mr. Chair, members, so the Clean Water Fund applications in this pot of money, typically we've been able to fund one out of every four applications that come in. Historically, the demand for voluntary conservation and trying to meet the priority needs of the local water plans far exceeds the amount of clean water funding that's available to do so.
So with the funding that if we leave the funding as it is, we are still only funding one out of four applications, and this would take $5 million out of that pool of money that we can't meet right now. We have way too many applications for the money that we have.
Mr. Chair and members, this would take that $5 million out of the implementation as opposed to additionality. It is for implementation. It's for buffers. And so that's the dilemma.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Harnick.
Buffers has been identified as the discussion's gone around this table and many of the others, as one of the highest priority water quality issues that we need to implement in the near term. And this is an attempt to provide those counties of the state that don't have access to other kinds of funds to implement a priority water quality strategy for the state, to provide them with some degree of funding to work in that direction. Is it enough? No. Like Ms. Kudelka said, there's never enough money to go all the way around. But if buffers are really a priority, then I think we need to give serious consideration to this kind of an amendment, or don't expect landowners to have that obligation.
And
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just also like to point out that of this $5 million, only half of it is being targeted in the non-CREP area. The rest of it's available statewide. And again, all of these practices are on-the-ground implementation. It's just that we are targeting some of this to the implementation of buffers.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, we've worked on a lot of water issues together, and you know that I respect you highly. I mean, we've done a lot of good work together over the years. This was really late, and so this is the first time we've seen this. And our bill has been very balanced. We have almost $20 million that can be used for the CREP program in this bill. I think we've really been deliberative and done a good job in the balance of this bill. And so at this time, I can't support your amendment, although I understand what you're trying to accomplish. But I think when we already can't fund only one out of four projects for the whole state, I would hate to move this money out of this pool.
Mr. Chair, I just point out that none of those $20 million can be used outside of the CREP area.
Well, I would disagree, Representative.
Representative Lilly's first, then your second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Mr. Harnick's comments. And, one of the neat things about being a legislator, we get professionals and experts that come and testify, but sometimes you learn something from another state rep, which is shocking, I know. But Fabian, when we were at the last conference committee, Representative Fabian showed me in his county, I think it was one county, 1,200 miles of ditches. And I'm sorry, it's shocking. That's a lot of, and they want to do a good job. So it's hard not to to realize the need, and I think we will as the state moves forward. I don't know if there's an appetite. I just want to throw it out here. We do have a letter, or I've heard about a letter, or at least a conversation between the MMB about moving off the 5%. If that was even, if there's an appetite, I don't know if there is, going down to 2.5%. Maybe that's a way to fund what Representative Torgelson's trying to accomplish. I'm not, you know, but I don't know if that's a solution to, or if I'm causing more trouble than needed. But I think we have a letter from the MMB that you know, moving off the needle might be a end up being a win-win-win. So
well, they have to fund it next go around if we don't do it now, and some chose not to do it that way, but bite the bullet this year. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I want to repeat, if you look at the amendment, you're targeting $2.5 million outside of the CREP area. 54 counties are in the CREP area. 54. The buffer plan that's been presented and been passed into law is totally unfair to the Red River Valley. CREP dollars cannot be used. Okay? Let me repeat that. CREP dollars cannot be used in my district. In Marshall County alone, as Representative Lilly says, there are 1,200 miles of public ditches. 1,200. Take a look at the map on the DNR website. That's just in Marshall County. If people realistically think that you are going to get willing participation in the governor's buffer proposal, and you're not going to do something to encourage landowners to willingly be involved in that, you're kidding yourselves. Members, I go back to the district, and I spend a lot of time there. When I have town halls and so forth, the number one topic of conversation is buffers. And there's a tremendous amount of dissatisfaction with what's going on with the buffers right now. And again, there's a lot of landowners who take exception to the idea that they somehow don't care about clean water, and they don't care about their land. The most important asset that they have is their land. And I would strongly encourage you to please support this tiny bit of money that may be able to help people get behind a major conservation practice in the state of Minnesota. Again, the four counties that I represent, which were named by Mr. Harnack, Kitson, Marshall, Pennington, and Roseau, all have, again, the same as they had on the no net gain, they have county board resolutions opposed to the current buffer law. None of them are asking for the law to be gutted. None of them are asking for the law to be repealed. But they are asking for some flexibility and some dollars to help them take jurisdiction and implement. We're not going to get buy-in to this plan and local jurisdiction if all we're going to do is use clubs instead of carrots. People want to be supportive of this. And again, to diminish their concerns on this issue as well is not setting us up for good things to happen in Northwest Minnesota. I would implore members, please, on this one issue, vote for the Torkelson Amendment, please.
Okay. Representative Senator. Representative Senator.
Sure, I'll take one. Yeah. Thanks.
I'm not a Representative Senator.
Representative
Senator. So
you owe me.
I might not have been paying attention to Mr. Harnack, which is really unusual because I always do. I learn a lot from him. But maybe Representative Fabian or Torkelson can tell me that, but it's north of
Highway 2, I believe. Isn't that where most of the counties are from? Highway 10. And can you tell me again, or our group here again, why they're not included in that program, how that came about? Because I do have a bill with Senator Johnson from East Grand Forks. I think it's a $10 million bonding bill for this very project, you know, for the counties that are north that didn't qualify, not including the 54 counties. Can you tell me how that happened?
Mr. Chair, if I may, and maybe Ms. Kadelka can come down and answer the question for sure, but this is a federal program. It was designed by the feds, as I understand, and the federal government expressly targeted the Minnesota River Valley. I'm going to say generically, but Ms. Kadelka, would you help me out, please?
Ms. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Fabian is correct. The CREP program is one that has to be targeted in Minnesota. It can't be the whole state. It can't be the majority of the state. And so this is nothing against the rest of the state at all. This is simply when we tried to have a larger area, that did not work. And so through the process with the federal government, what ended up happening is the stakeholder group made the decision to focus in on the areas of the state with the highest nitrogen and phosphorus areas that were identified by the monitoring, by PCA's monitoring. And so those areas that needed the highest phosphorus and nitrogen reductions are the 54 county areas. And, Mr. Chair, members, I think the other piece of this is that the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program and this cost share money are not apples and apples. They're two different things. And so one of the pieces of this is these dollars, the CREP dollars are for wetland restoration, for buffers, and for wellhead protection areas for drinking water. And so up in the northwest, up in the Red River Valley, the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, which requires wider buffer areas, may not be the best fit for implementing the buffer law, especially on those public ditches that only require 16 and a half feet or some sort of alternative practice. And so the Board of Water and Soil Resources is absolutely in favor of being able to have adequate funding to be able to help out landowners. Our recommendation is that it not replace other implementation dollars.
Senator Ingram, thank you. Follow-up. So of this group, and maybe Representative Fabian can help me out, of this group that came together and made this determination, was there not representation from the north, or was there enough science to point that the phosphorus, whatever you determined, was not enough to bother with the counties on the north of Highway 10? That basically it?
Mr. Chair and members, it was broad representation, and quite honestly, the decision around, it was several factors, so it was looking at vulnerable wellhead protection areas for drinking water. It was looking at the highest concentrations of nitrogen and phosphorus, which the maps and the science were trying to, for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program as a state, make those hard decisions, recognizing that not all conservation programs can work in all places around the state. And so it's there's no dissing of anybody else across the area of the state. It's just that the stakeholders had to make a hard decision of how do we make sure that we meet the federal requirements of having focused, targeted areas for this program.
Members, I would just remind you that we put $22 million in this bill for the soil and water districts, and that was not a council recommendation. But they were the orphan child. We know that the soil and water groups are the boots on the ground. They're the ones that need to get funded. And so I think it's really important that we keep that funded as we intended. When I said that there was $20 million in this bill for CREP approximately, there's actually $3 million that is dedicated towards CREP, which would not be usable by you to in your counties. But the other $17 million is not dedicated towards PREP, so it could be used for buffers and buffer easements. So I think we do have money in this bill that you can use, and I appreciate what you're trying to accomplish, but I think the $22 million is really focused on funding the soil and water districts as we originally intended.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Just a final comment, Mr. Chair. I don't think anybody had any clue how complicated buffers were going to be when we went down this path a few years ago at the guidance of the governor. And including the governor, I don't think realized just how complex and difficult this buffer issue is going to be. I've made every effort to try and make it work. This is just one more ingredient in that effort to try to make it work, to try and make it as a little bit more fair across the state. As I said earlier, these are all implementation dollars. It's a kind of what are we focusing our implementation money on at this moment in time, and I believe it's appropriate that we focus some of this money on the implementation of buffers in this non-CREP area of the state because they are not eligible, and it's not just the CREP money that's in this bill. I mean, we're looking at a CREP program that in total has state funds, I believe, of $150 million and federal funds of $250 million. So you're looking at a $400 million program, and we're just looking for a little piece to kind of help out. And I realize all that money's not going to buffers. That's not it. But there certainly is a discrepancy between the buffer and non-buffer areas of the state. And, Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call on the amendment.
Very well. Senator Sinjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse the verbiage. Sometimes I just see it. You got to dumb it down a little bit for me. So we have 87 counties to which this our buffer law applies. I think is that correct? For instance, Senator Representative Fabian, or yeah, okay. And so we've got 54 counties to which we're willing to support, at least at this point, some financial assistance to help them with that buffer law. Is that generally correct? Just nod of the head.
Representative Fabian.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, too, but what we're talking about here is 54 counties in the CREP area versus 9 that are in the non-CREP area, heavy agriculture areas. This is where the greatest impact is going to occur with regards to the buffer programs in agriculture areas. I haven't heard anyone from northeast Minnesota talk to me about buffers. It's not an issue there. So we are talking largely about agriculture areas where you have the nitrates and the phosphates and the runoff and all that stuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful.
Okay. Representative Torkelson renews his amendment. It's A47, and he wants a roll call.
Chair Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Fabian?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Representative Lowy?
No.
Senator Reed?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Sinjin?
Yes.
Senator Lang?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Seven to three, the amendment passed. And no other amendments except for the overall amendment.
I would move the A17 0469 amendment as amended.
Vote on the delete all. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. And I think that one more vote. We have to vote on House File 77.
707 as amended. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Very well, motion carried. We have completed our job, and I think we will adjourn at this time, and hopefully we can get, get the thing passed.
My beer.
What?
Oh.